So mobile, cheaper, and cheaper than that web service. First, a short overview, what you're going to see in the next few minutes. First of all, I will talk about our cheaper than web service, which is a podcast web service that allows you to synchronize your subscriptions and your episode metadata and also the status of playing back episodes to the cloud. I'm going to show how the API works, what different kinds of APIs we offer, because we offer different APIs for different developers. Some client layers already exist and are already used by client applications. Supported clients, so some other clients, third-party clients that are already using our web service. And then a short introduction of our feed service, which helps application developers who want to do new podcast applications to reuse the logic of parsing RSS feeds and podcasts and taking care of all the, of fixing all the bugs that some RSS feeds have through a web service that's called feed service. And then I'm going to show you something about the Cheaper mobile application. Cheaper already runs on some mobile platforms, actually on different ones, and I'm going to show you a bit of the QML UI, then the experimental Cheaper HTML5 UI, and then I also have some demos of how the actual UIs look and how they work on the device. So the Cheaper.net web service. The initial idea was basically to accumulate a list of example podcasts for new users of Cheaper who just download the application and don't have any idea what they would like to subscribe to or what content that exists out there, to have some example list where I can say, okay, this is an example list, I take this one and this one, this one looks interesting, and start using podcasts like this. That was basically the initial idea. It's like a crowdsourced podcast directory or podcast top list. But as it turned out, that was not like the best feature that the users liked. The users thought it was a great thing that you could back up your subscription list in the cloud. Because obviously if you're uploading a subscription list, you also get a backup. So if you're reinstalling something or if you messed it up, format your hard disk or something, then you can just get back your subscription list and reuse it. And also sharing, like you can publish a subscription list, and if somebody asks you what kind of podcast do you listen to, you just post a URL and the other person can look at it and get the podcast from there. So the initial implementation was just a simple CGI script. It used plain OPML files. It was really, really crappy, but it did the job. And then in 2009, we were proposing a university project. So at the university, we have to do some kind of project. And usually what you do is some kind of throwaway project. So every project group does the same thing. It's like, I don't know, a hotel management system or something. And then you throw it away after the end of the semester. Obviously, that's not very motivating. So what we tried to do is say, we want to do this existing web service, and we want to create a great website out of it, and we want to do this as a university project and get university credits for it. So that's what we did, and it was a successful project, and now the current site is running based on this project that we did. As of today, we are tracking 78,000 podcasts. That means, and these podcasts contain about 8.5 million episodes. So podcast is like a TV show or TV series, and episodes would be a single episode of the series. And we are right now having about 28,000 registered users that are using the service, more or less. The web service itself is based on Python, Django, and CouchDB. So we're using CouchDB for the storage because we had some problems with MySQL in terms of performance. And the great thing about this web service is it is open source under the Affero GPL, which is basically like a GPL but for web services. So if you want, you can download the source code and put it on your own server. But obviously, it makes the most sense if you use the central service, because then all the top list stuff and like all the aggregation works best there, and also the sharing. But you're free to contribute to it and also install it on your own server if you don't trust us for whatever reason. As for the API, we have three levels of API, if you want. So the first level is the simple. We call it the simple API. It's quick to integrate, and it works for a stateless client. So that's basically, if you have any application and you quickly want to get integrated with our service, you can use this. It's very simple. There are different formats. And you don't have to store any like synchronization state on your client. That's what I mean with a stateless client. So if you're starting out, use the simple API. But obviously, you're missing out on some great features that the advanced API offers, like synchronizing playback status. And what this means is, if you have multiple devices, for example, you have a cell phone and your home computer, now you're listening to a podcast on your home computer, and it is 1 hour long, and you start listening for 20 minutes, but then it turns out you have to go away. So you would have to like remember, okay, I came until this point, and then take out your phone and say, okay, now I seek there, and I can play from there. With the advanced API and with the synchronization, if that podcast client supports it, you can just close down your desktop player, open up your phone, and just hit play, and via the web service, it will automatically synchronize the playback position. So that's very nice for doing that. Obviously, because it's more advanced and we want to keep the traffic low, in the case of the advanced API, you have to have a stateful client, which basically means you have to store some state data like last synchronization timestamps, stuff like that, on the client in order to facilitate the workings of the client library. And these simple and advanced APIs for your user needs to have some authentication, because obviously you don't want your subscription maybe to be public, and you obviously don't want somebody else to override your subscriptions. So that's what you have to do. You log in. But you also have a public API where you don't need to log in at all, and that's stuff like the podcast directory, the top list, so everything that's just read-only and that you can use to quickly get, for example, some podcast suggestions on your client, even if you don't want to use the synchronization feature of the web service. And some technical stuff, we support various request and response formats. So if you're uploading the stuff, you can either use XML-based format like OPML. You can also use JSON, which is nice for some JavaScript-based clients, because then you don't deal with all the XML stuff. Also, plain text, if you're into command line applications, you might just want to do a plain text file and upload it that way. And also XML, which is our special XML format, which has some more features than the OPML. Just some features so that you get an overview of what works. There's a subscription management, which means just which podcasts are you subscribed to. So if you think about TV shows again, it could be this TV show and this TV show. Just a list of subscriptions. Then episode actions. So we track, for example, also the playback status, the playback position, but also the status. It's like the web service knows, have you downloaded this episode already? Have you listened to it already? How much have you listened to it? Have you deleted it already on your other device? Because if we are on the go and you might have a list of many episodes and you don't know, have I listened to this podcast episode on my home computer, for example? And with the web service, it takes care of that and synchronizes that. And devices, synchronizing between devices. So that makes sense if you have more than one device. You could say, like, whenever I add one podcast to my home computer, I also want to have this podcast added to my mobile device. And you can also do stuff like add podcasts on the website, and then the next time you use your home computer or your mobile device, it gets automatically added there. So you don't have to be at your computer to subscribe to something. There are some features that support some special clients, like server stored shared in settings. So if you want to have the update frequency synchronized between clients, that's also possible. Favorite episodes, which is something like a social network feature that we have. So you can mark episodes favorite and then again publish this somewhere on your personal website or something. And podcast lists, for example, my colleague who is doing most of the web service work, he's learning Japanese. So he's created a list of all the podcasts that he likes that are related to learning Japanese. So if a new user comes along and says, oh, I want to learn Japanese, they can look at this list and say, okay, there's a good set of podcasts that I like, and that might be a good starting point, and then they can pick and remove stuff from there. And the public API features, this is something that other clients might want to integrate, and you don't need any authentication for that, so you just use it. A list of tags and categories, podcasts from tags and categories. So there's the tag news, so you can get podcasts that are about news. There are podcasts that are just contain music or just contain talk radio, comedy, or whatever. And you can also query the user-created podcast list that I've talked before. We all have top lists, like the most subscribed, most listened to episode, most subscribed podcasts, and all the episode metadata. So if you don't want to parse the podcast yourself, you can even get all the information about the episodes, like the length, the format, description, stuff like that, from our web service. Now, the client libraries, these are existing libraries that are used by existing applications and that you can use so they don't have to write directly to your web API, you just have to use the library, which is very comfortable. But of course, you're also allowed to use the web-based API and write your own client library. And it would be great if you could share it with the world. It would save some people some time. So there's Python MyGPO client, that's the reference implementation. It's written pure in Python. That's because the main client is also written in Python and is also used in the official GPO client. So we are eating our own dog food. We don't have a special implementation. This is the library that we use for the official GPorter client. So everything that the official GPorter client can do, you can do with this library. And coincidentally, another student group that came 1 year after us, they also had the same course and had the same problem, like which kind of project can we do without having any boring throwaway project. And they saw our web service and they thought, we want to integrate that into Amarok. And so they thought, well, should we write the support directly into Amarok or should we do a library? And we told them, if you can do, please do a library because it would be very nice. And so they wrote a C++ library. It uses it looks very Qt-ish from the API point of view. So it depends on Qt, but it also works like any other Qt library. So if you're used to the Qt APIs, it looks very familiar to you. And this actually used by Amarok, I think, for 1 or 2 years now. And there's also like the N9 podcast app done by some Nokia employee, and that's a C++ Qt application, and he's also using it. It's not the same as the GPorter client running on the N9, but there's another application, and they are actually using this library, so they're also using our web service. Now we can talk about supported clients. Obviously, the most advanced, or probably most advanced client is the GPorter client itself. So that's the client application that I'm going to show you later on. It works on the desktop, so on your Linux, Mac OS X, or Windows computer, you can use that. It's also available on MIMO, which means the N800 and N810 internet tablets, also the N900 and the MeeGo phones, just the N9 and the N950. And for every specific platform there, we have a specific UI so that it looks native and works like all the other applications. Because it doesn't make sense that you have a desktop application running on my mobile phone. It wouldn't just work because it would be too small or too cumbersome to use. Also, as mentioned, Amarok is using the web service and supports it. And Clementine, which is like Amarok, which has some different goals in terms of support. And that's for your desktop computer. Other platforms are, for example, Android. There's GPO Droid, which is it tries to be a lightweight client for the GPorter web service. It's not fully featured yet and might not work all the time, but it exists. And its decided goal is to make use of the web service. And there's PodX, which is a more popular Android client. And the guy who did PodX, he wrote a special Android account integration that allows you to add a GPorter.net account to your Android phone, and then it does the syncing to PodX. For Windows Phone 7, same guy wrote WPodder, which is kind of weird. And it also supports synchronization, but most of these clients don't support the whole feature set. It's just like getting all the podcast directory and searching for podcasts. So that's kind of a pity, but that's how the people who wrote these applications decided to do it. For WebOS, there's the DRPodder, which is just like the podcast client on WebOS, and if you apply a patch to a source code and build it again, you can use the GPorter.net directory. And for Symbian, there's Podcatcher and Podmaster, which are Qt applications that are using the libmygpo Qt library. Now, we also offer feed service, so that's a bit aside from the normal GPorter.net website. It allows you to do RSS parsing and error correction. So if it's about podcasts, it's not just you subscribe to your RSS feed, you get all the enclosures and you download it. There are many podcasts that have some faults, like they are not supplying the file size, they have the different file types, they are missing information like the title, and all kinds of errors that we take care of in the GPorter client that is written in Python. If you want to automatically make use of all these nice features, like the error correction features, you can use the GPorter.net feed service, and instead of downloading the RSS feeds directly, you would just download you would make a request to this feed service, say these are my RSS feeds, please parse them for me, and we'll give you one result, and it will be JSON, and it will contain all the information, and it will be already like chewed for you, so that you don't have to parse everything yourself. So that's very nice if you have a low-powered client. If you don't want to do all the XML parsing yourself, use this one, and you can see the URL in the lower right corner. Okay, enough about the web service for now. Let's have a look at how the mobile application looks. Just some history lesson, very quick. It started in 2005 as a Linux desktop application, which means that I thought, okay, podcasts are cool. Let's have a look what applications exist for Linux. There are not so many interesting applications. So yeah, just start writing this application. And at first, I mean, the first version, which was like in the first 3 weeks or something, was written in Java because that's like from my educational background. But I quickly figured out that Java on Linux isn't really that popular, at least in 2005. So I thought, oh, what can I use? And I found Python and PyGDK. So that's what I used to write the application. Then in 2008, actually some other person ported the PyGDK application to internet tablets. And then we in the GPodder project were getting bug reports about GPodder not running correctly on internet tablets. And we were thinking like, well, we didn't wrote it for internet tablets. So we looked into it and found out, okay, there is access support. And then we decided, okay, we will just upstream all the changes from the port and support it in the official upstream project. And based on that, in 2009, the same code base was ported to MIMO 5, which is basically the successor of the internet tablets. And meanwhile, on the desktop side, things happened like a command line interface. So if you're a real console hacker, you can use that one. A web UI. So if you're running GPodder on your server, you can just open a port there and use a web browser to navigate it, and also ports to Windows and OS X, so that's just what happened on the desktop side. Last year, the N9 came out, so obviously there had to be a new cool UI because GTK wasn't really supported that well, and it didn't look native. So there was a new UI for Mega Harmattan, which I'm going to show you in a minute. And it uses PySet and QML, so all the stuff before that has been using Python and PyGDK. Now we're still using Python and using the same code base, the same core that does all the management, but the UI has been replaced by a QML UI. That's the code statistics for the open source project, for the client. As you can see, the blue one is the amount of code in lines. The red part is the amount of comments. And blank lines, just blank lines in the source code, are green. What I can see here is that at some point the N800 port took off. Then what led to a big increase in code size was the N900 port because there was so many different UI stuff that was going into the code base. Then the code size was going down because when last year the QML UI was released, it was decided that we can't support the old stuff forever. And in order to make it easier to maintain, we're going to remove it. So that made it fall a bit down. And now the code size is growing again with additions like the web UI and stuff like that. That's how GPodder looks on the N9. It's the QML UI. Apparently works very nicely. Users are happy with it. And even though it's written in Python, it's still quite fast and usable. And yeah, you can see that on the last picture of these, the GPodder.webster is integrated and you can use it to search for stuff. But the HTML5 UI, that's very, very experimental, very, very new, not really working at all, but it already has something to show. That would be an evolution of GPodder's web UI, so instead of just having it run on your server, you could use it to run it on any device that you want, as long as you have some kind of native development support, because GPodder has to run natively because it's written in Python, so you have to have some kind of Python interpreter, which you cannot really run in just HTML5. And the reason why that's a good thing is because it contains all the podcast parsing and downloading stuff and download resuming. I was talking to some people yesterday about, like, is it possible to do everything just in HTML5? And it turned out, even if they have stuff like downloading files from the web, what they don't yet have is stuff like resuming downloads. And if you're downloading very big files, like 100 megabyte files, it's very important to also have support for resuming downloads. So even if HTML5 sounds very good in theory, in practice, it quickly turns out that for some things, you still need either very, very good APIs, which are not there yet, or you need some kind of ability to do native development. And even if you do the UI in HTML5, you need to have some backend in some cases, and it should not run on the server. It might need to run on your local device because you might be in a plane and you want to listen to podcasts. You can't just stream it there because there's no internet, usually. So yeah, that's the HTML5 UI. There's the GPodder core running an independent server. It serves JSON and HTML to the client, so the client is any web browser or web view. The downloading happens on the server, that's the daemon, so it doesn't happen directly in the browser or the web view, it happens on the server, which also means that download can happen in the background. playback can happen in the background, even if the killer is on the UI. And the interaction with the user happens in the HTML UI. So for that, you can use all the HTML stuff. And because it's using this native part, the application automatically has all the stuff that the Python GPorter application has. So you don't have to think about download resuming, it's already in there. You don't have to think about parsing the feeds the right way, it's already in there. And you don't have to think about synchronizing with the web service because it's already in there. And because it shares the same code base, if there are improvements to any of the UIs of GPorter, for example, if the application on the A9 is improved, the HTML5 UI will also improve automatically, and the desktop UI will also improve automatically, the backend. And of course, what this needs is native development kit for the server. In terms of architecture, you can see it looks a bit like this. You have the Python interpreter running in the native process. There you have the web UI module, which basically serves all the static content, which is the UI itself. It doesn't change. And there's a JSON server, which basically is an endpoint in the HTTP server, which allows you to say, give me a list of all podcasts, give me a list of all episodes, now download this episode and do that. And that's actually talked to by the web browser WebView. So in the web browser WebView, all the UI stuff happens, and then it does requests to your server and tells, like, the local running server, embedded server, and tells it, do that and do this. And below you have the GPorter core, which is this very grown and major code base that already works very well for doing podcasts. And it does downloading and playback in the background. And it's really, yeah, it's really useful because then you can reuse all the stuff there. I'm now trying to do a short demo of the application. Let's start with the basics. That's the command line interface. So if you're like a command line guy, you can do that. You can say, okay, I need some help. You get a list of commands. Let's list my podcasts. I hope the colors are okay and you can see that. So I now have two subscriptions. I can do update. And it will try to update the podcast. Works nicely, and now it says 7 new episodes. I can say pending, and now shows which kind of episodes that are new in that case. So let's quit the command line UI. Now, it uses the same code base, as I said, and also the same data storage. So now, if I feel like it, I can also say, okay, I want to use the GTK UI. Open up the GTK UI, the same subscriptions, and these 7 episodes here are new. Can do another update here, and I get all these 7 episodes that are new. So again, the UI looks different. That's the desktop UI. Sorry for the theming. It doesn't really work on OS X, but the theming usually looks great in other operating systems. So let's close that down. Now, what else do we have? We have the QML UI, which is used on mobile devices like the N9. The colors might not be very good here, but you can see it's targeted at mobile devices. You wouldn't want to use that on your desktop computer or something. And yeah, again, now you don't see the colors that well, but it looks like really a native API on that specific platform. And again, the same subscriptions. I can do an update here. And it will again show me the 7 new episodes. I can do the downloading here. And this is using the same download code as on all other UIs. It's just that the visual representation of whatever UI or platform that you have looks different. So you have the mobile stuff, you have the CLI stuff, and you have the desktop stuff. So I've said that there is a web UI, so let's try that one. As I said, simple starts a local web server and embedded web server. If you now go and open it, it uses jQuery Mobile here. Right now it's just a read-only display kind of stuff, but it shows that it can already read all the metadata that that the backend supports. So you can even filter stuff here. That's all provided by jQuery Mobile, so you don't really have to do much of any code there. There's a list of episodes, can go back, pick another one. And now, in this case, what already works, because I'm using Chromium, is even the media playback. So I'm just having a HTML5 video tag here. So You can just use the video player in the browser.
There's nothing to eat up here.
To play back all the media content. Right now it's streaming from the original server, but it might be totally possible to stream it directly from the embedded web server, which is running on localhost, so that even if you're offline, you can use the streaming stuff in your web browser because you're streaming from your local disk or from your local flash. Obviously, the same thing works for audio. Just to show you, if it loads up, you can stream audio in that case. And now the only thing that needs to be done in this case is make the UI nice, make it look good with native stuff. And all the really hard stuff, like downloading stuff, synchronizing stuff, is already done. And you can reuse that. And as you can see, you can also reuse the data storage. So that's very nice. And it provides a very nice way to port stuff to other platforms without having to reinvent the wheel the whole time. If you can't do that, you can just reuse the web service stuff. Yeah? Right now, this is it's not in the backend, mm-hmm. but for example, on the A9 with the QML UI, there's a feature where you can say, play this podcast, and then after you play it, you can pause it, and then you say, and now for these other episodes, enqueue them, mm-hmm. so whenever the first one finishes, then the other one starts. So you can do kind of playlists, but right now it's not generic, it's dependent on the UI. So, any other questions so far, or, yeah?
So, I actually have two questions.
Yep.
So, one, you were talking about the web services earlier and the authenticating back to web and, web services. What method do you use to be authenticated?
Right now, there are two different ways. For the simple stuff, we can use HTTP basic authentication over SSL.
Okay.
Though we support SSL because HTTP basic authentication isn't really that secure. Yeah, so we are doing SSL, and we're actually enforcing SSL for the API calls.
Okay.
So we do a redirect if it's not SSL. What we also support is something like a session or something like a session ID, so you can request a token, and then you can use this token. But of course, it depends on the client if they want to implement it.
Sure.
Because doing HTTP basic authentication is usually easier, and developers are lazy, so they don't do it. And also, if you just do it basic authentication, you can just use username and password. If you want to do the stuff with the token, you have to request the token at some point, make sure that it's still valid, and then always pass the token, maybe as a header, and doing just a simple HTTP request without a header is more difficult and more easier than doing this with a header. So.
Developers are lazy, I'm shocked. So the other question I have is, you took out a bunch of support for a bunch of different UIs.
Yeah.
Was there pushback in your user community when you did that?
When I removed support?
Yes.
Okay. So yeah, definitely. So especially since like the version that includes support for all like the old stuff, it's 2.something. And the new stuff, which includes still the CLI, the desktop UI, and the QML UI, but not MIMO4, MIMO5 stuff, it's 3.x. So even in terms of having a naive user look at it, it's I want to have version 3.x and not 2.x. But you just have to tell them, okay, I can't support it forever because one day only has 24 hours and you don't really want to do development all the time. You still want to have a life. So that has to go away. And of course, as it's an open source project, you can always tell your users, if you want to have support for it, write it yourself. And actually, there are some bug fix releases for the old versions. So actually, I think the last bug fix release was just 2 months ago or something. But it's clearly defined and clearly communicated to the users that there won't be any new features and any new development on the old stuff, except if they are submitting patches.
Okay.
Thanks.
Yes. You are relying on Python support.
Yeah.
So how has this been in these different platforms and how do you expect this to be in Tizen?
Okay. So for Tizen, I'm not entirely sure how it works out because there hasn't been any like native development stuff announced or something. And when there's native development, of course, that would be possible because you can use Python just like a C library. You just have to put all the data files in there, so that would be possible. And especially since Tizen just uses HTML5, so in the case of this architecture, it would be okay, you just need a Python interpreter, you don't need to have any binding to the UI code. Obviously, on MIMO 4 and MIMO 5, there was like Nokia provided official Python bindings for the UI toolkit. So that's PyGTK and PyHilden in case of MIMO 5. And in case of Migo Harmattan, which is the N9, you have the PySub bindings, which are Qt bindings for Python. And then you can use the QML UI. So it really depends on the platform to support the Python stuff. But I've talked with many developers, and I think that it's just easier to do stuff in Python, because especially if you're a hobby developer, you don't have that much time to do all the native development stuff. So in Python, you can more or less like do quick prototypes and then just deploy them somewhere.
You also run the web service you showed earlier.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can you handle this on your own?
So what we had like before 2 weeks ago or something was we had two virtual servers, and we are paying out of our own pockets for that, but it was just like small virtual servers, so and it was okay. So we were two people doing the project, and we were just saying, okay, we can invest some of our own money just for fun. Yeah. And right now, because the web service has been quite slow because there have been so many requests, there were actually many users complaining about the performance. So what we said that, of course, it's just a hobby project for us. And now we've got some person who is doing hosting, and he's now offering us to host. So he's now actually, I think as of this week or last week, we are actually running the web service on his server, and he basically sponsors us in this way because he likes the service and wants to use it, and he wants it to be fast. And obviously, as it's an open web service, you could always run your own instance on your own machine if you wanted to.
Yeah, sure, but most people will probably use yours.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We are not even aware of any other deployment of the web service, like a big deployment or something. And yet, it definitely makes sense to have the central service because of all the top list stuff in there. Any other questions? Yeah, it depends. It's just a taste kind of thing, so whatever you like.
Anything where white space matters?
No, it's actually very good, because then you don't have to have all the flame wars about which kind of indentation you use, because there's only one way.
It's broken.
Yeah, it's just, yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, it's very easy to get stuff done, and I think for some things, for the UI stuff, I really like the QML way of doing things, just declaring how it should behave, then it behaves in the right way. And it's obviously not suited for everything, but in my case, it has really turned out to be very helpful, very easy, and getting stuff done without having to spend lots of time. Okay, should we? Okay.